Good afternoon and welcome to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH. We are streaming live on the KTTH smartphone app. A federal judge just gave the green light to illegal immigrants to vote in local elections, and that is most definitely what's trending.
What's trending? Legal.
It's a 12-page opinion that was delivered by Judge Amy Berman Jackson. And in it, she dismisses a legal challenge to a D.C. law, one that allows illegal immigrants to vote in municipal elections. For example, there's an upcoming election for the Board of Elections that they will now be able to vote in. Now, the lawsuit was brought by voters that represented various families within the D.C. area. They're actual voters, and they were represented by the Immigration Reform Law Institute. It's a conservative organization that obviously focuses on immigration issues. Now, the judge in her ruling said she's dismissing the case because they lacked standing. They lacked standing. And I couldn't figure out how they would lack standing. Now, I would lack standing because I'm not in D.C. I'm not a resident of D.C. I'm not allowed to vote in D.C., so if I sued, I would lack standing. But they actually live in D.C. They vote in D.C. And so I read her complaint, her issue. And the ruling is nonsensical. I mean, I understand what she's saying, but the logic doesn't make sense to me. She says of the complaint, it does not include facts showing plaintiff's right to vote has been denied, that they have been subjected to discrimination or inequitable treatment or denied opportunities when compared to another group, or that their rights as citizens have been subordinated merely because of their father's country of origin. They identify nothing that has been taken away or diminished, and no right that has been made subordinate to anyone else's. Now, immediately I was like, well, that's definitely not true. But then I continued to read just in case. I was, I wanted to make sure I was getting the full context. She said they may object as a matter of policy to the fact that immigrants get to vote at all, but their votes will not receive less weight or be treated differently than non-citizens' votes. They are not losing representation in any legislative body, nor have citizens as a group been discriminatorily gerrymandered, packed, or cracked to divide, concentrate, or devalue their votes. So at that point, I was like, okay, now I definitely understand what it is she's saying. And she's 100% false. She's absolutely incorrect. Her whole claim is that the person who is voting in this country legally, a citizen who gets to vote in D.C. elections, that they are not somehow canceled. Their vote is not canceled out. Their vote is not devalued. Yes, it is. It 100% is. It's canceled out by someone in this country illegally who shouldn't get the right to vote. Thus, if they vote for different candidates or different issues, if they're on the opposite side, the illegal immigrant's vote just canceled out the vote of the legal citizen. How are we pretending that that's not harming the person who's allowed to legally vote? How are we ignoring the complaint like that? How are we going to claim that the vote that you just took is not harmed or impacted in any way? Their vote now means less than it did before. The only way that they can claim otherwise is if every illegal immigrant who votes in this upcoming election and all the elections in the future would vote precisely the same way as the plaintiffs would vote. Now, as much as I'm sure they would hope that's the case, probably not going to be the case. The argument doesn't make sense. And let's bring it to a different world. Let's take out the illegal immigrant part, because it certainly feels like this is one of those cases where the judge is choosing to abide by her own political ideology around the issue of illegal immigration. So let's just take it out. Let's just say someone right now is listening in Bothell or Federal Way. You are now granted the right via a law to vote in D.C. You don't live in D.C. You're not from D.C. You've never even been to D.C. You're in Bothell or Federal Way. Now, you're otherwise legally allowed to vote in a general sense. Like, that has not been taken away from you. You are of age. So you get to vote in D.C.? Wouldn't you get to vote in D.C. by the argument that's being made by this judge who says an illegal immigrant's vote, who otherwise would not be allowed to vote, not eligible to vote in our elections, she's saying that those votes don't cancel out anyone else's vote. Okay, so I want to vote. I want to vote in D.C. It's the state's, it's the country's capital. Shouldn't I get that chance as a Seattle resident? Now, of course, you would say no, and she would say no. She would say, huh? You don't even live here. You don't have the right to vote. Exactly. The illegal immigrant doesn't have the right to vote either. Merely living in D.C. illegally does not mean that they have the right to vote. And there have been other laws that have been challenged in New York and San Francisco, basically doing the same exact thing, that ended up getting thrown out, the laws itself, as unconstitutional. And yet somehow this one's going to stand? Of course not, but they have a very liberal judge. Now, ultimately, it's going to move forward and it's going to be accepted and this judge will be overruled and the law itself will be tossed. That's eventually how it's going to end. But until it gets to that point, similar case in San Francisco where they went through the process and they went through the process and they went through the process because it's a very long one. And meanwhile, they were still moving forward with elections and allowing the law to be implemented until finally a judge had said, okay, you can't do that. In San Francisco, I believe there were two school board elections that illegal immigrants were allowed to vote in before the law was thrown away. Now, how many will be held in D.C. by the time that, I have no idea. But that it's just one is doing a disservice. And you are taking away the rights to vote of American citizens. This is all intentional. All of this is intentional. And every single time we get a case like this, it's to test the system and see how far they can move forward. And when I say they, I'm talking about Democrat interests. This is precisely why the left kept the borders porous. And it's why for 3 years they said nothing and pretended there was no issue at the border because it was only impacting Texas. Texas is a what color state? Red or blue?
Red.
Exactly. What happens if it gets filled with folks in this country illegally, courtesy of the Democrats? Does it become redder or does it maybe get purple?
I'd say it become a little bit more purple.
Yeah. And then eventually, what does it become?
Blue.
Blue. Precisely. That was the goal of all of this. It was to change the demographics on the ground so you can, number one, get more representation in the Congress and number in the House. And number two, end up taking control, start winning more elections, and then slowly, this is the long game, slowly turn a red state blue. And they've been going after Texas in particular for a while. A few years ago, they thought they could actually do it with Beto. Remember Beto O'Rourke? Beto. You mean Robert Francis? Yeah, I remember him. They thought, oh my God, he's going to beat Ted Cruz, and then he loses. Oops. Guy does not go away. He will never go away. He lost to Greg Abbott. He loses to Ted Cruz. He will not go away. But they thought that he had a shot because they keep thinking that Texas is starting to turn a little bit purple because of changing demographics. Now, the second that folks in Texas and Arizona started to send migrants to Chicago or New York, all of a sudden people started to scream about it. Why? What's Chicago? Blue or red?
Blue.
And Illinois?
Blue.
Okay, New York City?
Blue.
New York State?
Blue.
Okay, so in other words, they don't really need to change their demographics to get ever even bluer. They don't need to do that. Why would they need to do that? They are criminally blue. It's like Washington State. So all it's doing to them is being a big resource burden. And that's when they started to complain about what was going on. Fascinating how that all works, huh? That's what they're thinking. And that's why you're seeing these little tests over and over and over again. And they're going to do it until eventually it gets in front of the Supreme Court. They hope they'll actually have control of the Supreme Court at that point, which is why this next election is even more important than the other one. The first one, which gave Donald Trump three justices. And they've been consistently conservative. You get one more, perhaps to take over for someone who's retiring, I mean, I'm assuming at some point soon, Clarence Thomas is probably going to retire. He's getting very old. He's still on top of his game. I listen to the oral arguments on podcasts. I know. Shut up. Don't give me that look. I know. I'm a nerd. But he's still on top of it. But at some point, he's going to retire. And I imagine, unlike Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who made a mistake, she should have retired earlier when there was a Democrat in office so that she would be replaced by a Democrat. Instead, she ends up getting replaced by a Republican because she waited. She did it for the right reasons, and no one wants to just give in. But that was a mistake. And that's why a lot of Democrats kind of like upset with her. They'll never really talk about it too much, but they're kind of upset with that decision because the court would not look the way that the court currently looks had it not been for her decision to stay on. And so Clarence Thomas, maybe he goes 3 years and then retires so that we at least have a Republican replacement. But we don't know how any of this is going to go, which is why it's always a risk when you don't get out the vote and back the Republican to get into office and to take control of the Senate. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in the classroom?
Now, Democrats, as you'll recall, this year here in Washington State, in the legislature, they said absolutely not to mandatory curriculum around the Pledge of Allegiance. They said, oh my gosh, no, to mandatory curriculum around the Holocaust. But they said, yes, to mandatory curriculum around LGBT history. The governor just signed that bill into law. And now by 2025, you will have LGBT history taught in front of every single kid in this state, public schools. Now, as a general matter, I probably wouldn't care all that much. If this was 5 years ago, it probably wouldn't even come across my email inbox as an urgent email to look at. Look what happened. Look what was just signed into law. But in 2024, I'm definitely paying attention. In 2024, I'm paying attention because we've just gone through 3 years of relentless gender identity nonsense. Pretending that gender is fluid, pretending that biology doesn't matter, that you can have 17,000 different genders all at once or never at all. Sometimes they're different on Tuesday than they are on Wednesday. It's confusing kids. And at the same time, they are very clearly trying to indoctrinate children in liberal orthodoxy. Not all teachers, but a lot of them. And so now I look at this and say, okay, what are you doing? And I say this as someone who is actually gay. I say this as someone who's actually part of the community whose history is supposed to be taught. Something tells me they will never talk about the first gay talk show host named Jason Rantz. Probably not going to show up in any textbook in Washington State. It should, but it won't. Now, King 5, of course, they're celebrating this. They spoke with Ken Shulman, who's the executive director for the Lambert House in Seattle. The
LGBTQ identities were erased in schools, and largely in most places, they still are.
Huh? What in God's name are you talking about? Erased? It feels like this is all we talk about. Seriously, how much, let's be honest here, just about these issues in a general sense, just LGBT issues, for the last decade, obviously have been growing in discussion. The last 3 years, has anything been talked about more than this or race?
No, and I feel like there's always a news story every single day that's in the news.
Every day.
That's even generally speaking about these issues.
So this whole, well, they've erased. What do you, who's they? Who's erasing it? You do live in Washington State, right? I get if you're concerned in certain states about whether or not the curriculum is to your liking. But this is Washington, so let's stop pretending that we don't have these conversations on a regular basis. But please tell me, how are folks erased? Explain.
It's considered too controversial to mention to kids that Thoreau was gay, or Walt Whitman was gay, or Alan Turing, who invented the first computer.
I know who he is.
And helped solve the Enigma
code. I got it. I know who he is.
In World War II,
I saw the movie. Okay. So is that what he means? We're just labeling historical figures' sexual orientation? Last time I checked, and I haven't been in school for a bit, like 10 years, When we learned about, I don't know, George Washington, did it say George Washington, a heterosexual?
I don't think I've ever read that in a textbook.
Yeah. We don't learn anyone's gender at all. I mean, I guess sometimes it's clear because you also talk about their wives, but you don't know. They could have been on the DL. You have no idea. But we were never taught any of that. I was never taught the sexual orientation of anyone, right? I'm legitimately trying to think.
Unless
if there's
in the form of a context that's specifically needed,
yeah, very, very specific context
of history. You never hear George Washington, a straight white male who was a president.
Ironically, now you do, but courtesy of left-wing educators who want to say that this is a form of white supremacy culture, the cisgendered white male. Look at all this privilege that he had. But let's go to Walt Whitman. Okay. He's gay. And does that inform his poetry? Because presumably, that's the reason why I didn't know his sexuality at all up until I just heard that clip. I don't worry. It doesn't change anything. Don't care. Still don't really like Walt Whitman. A little overrated. But that's because everyone loves him. That's why I hate him. I knew it about Turing. It wasn't erased. I don't remember where I learned that. I don't know if it was in school or not. But that is that what you mean when you were talking about gay history or LGBT history? We're just going to label people? Now, I imagine that, okay, fine, that probably will be the case in a lot of it, right? But will it not go to the extremes? Are we going to pretend that Abraham Lincoln was gay? Because that was one of the rumors, of course. Are we going to focus on that? Well, you know, he did share a bedroom with that one character. Have you read their letters? It was awfully chummy. Well, they were all chummy at that time. Are we going to hear about the non-binary Joan of Arc? Probably non-binary.
Was non-binary a thing back then?
Yeah, sure. Didn't you hear? Dinosaurs that were transgender. It's always been here.
They had the technology before us?
Well, it's not technology.
Well, I mean, if you're doing it surgically.
They were just at the time. Well, non-binary, you just pretend to not have a gender. And we're supposed to look at you and say, oh, I can't tell your gender, even though it's obvious.
Does that mean they didn't identify as a dinosaur?
Well, yes, do we really want to get into the story of the Tyrannosaurus Rex that thought and presented itself as a velociraptor?
I mean, that sounds like an intriguing story.
It was. It might be a movie. I think I saw it in a documentary on YouTube. So we don't know at this point what the curriculum is going to be. And I'm making, you know, guesses, right? I'm speculating. I think I'm probably closer to the truth than not that it's going to be pretty partisan. That's my guess.
Make LGBTQ people less notable, more everyday, by simply advancing our equality and other people's recognition, in this case students, that we exist.
Yeah, I know. I've known gay people existed in history too. I know. I didn't wake up one day and say, oh, you know what? I think I've been lied to this entire time. Gay people did exist at some point other than now. The whole idea that you have to, it sort of comes to the same ideological position that we hear around certain books being taught in class, that students need to read books with characters that quote unquote look like them or sound like them or act like them, whatever it happens to be. We hear the same thing about teachers that, you know, students need to have teachers that quote unquote look like them. And if you don't do that, they don't feel seen. Okay. Well, first of all, the fourth grader you're talking about is not gay or straight at this point. This is a fourth grader. They have no concept at that point really of sexuality. And even if they did, reading about it in a book is not going to change the direction that they would be naturally biologically headed in, right? So, but this whole idea that if you don't include, insert whatever marginalized community, it's like they don't exist. To me, that screams just being thirsty for attention. I don't need to have good-looking gay Jewish talk show hosts in books that I read in order for me to really, really get into that book and feel valid. feel validated, feel seen. Like, I just don't need that, and I don't understand it. But by using that same exact argument, why is it that everyone on the left said no to the Holocaust curriculum? Because that's an actual historical event that's incredibly important to understand and learn about. It's really important. And if we're going to do this, if we're just going to play the labels game, so every time we'll get Abraham Lincoln, pronouns, he, him. If we're going to do that for every single person, why are we stopping there? Why would we not extend it? What was their religion? Seriously, what was their religion? Or did they have a disability? What was their age? We just got to throw that in, so we're going to get a long biography about all their protected classes next to their name. And you know, you just know that this is going to get abused. Here's a Sammamish high school teacher. Her name is Christy Bennett, which the King 5 story wanted us to know many times that she's bisexual. So she understands what's on the line here as a bisexual person. And she wants to see an all-inclusive curriculum, not just old cisgendered white men.
I've seen firsthand how important an inclusive curriculum can be and how life-changing it can be to help a student see themselves in the curriculum instead of some old dead white guys from the 1700s.
Yeah. Okay. Again, does that sound like someone you want teaching your kid? Anyone who talks like that? Some old dead white guys. It's just so insufferable.
Aren't all white guys going to be eventually old and dead white guys?
Yeah, and they're awful because they're white guys, white men. Ugh. At some point, someone's going to say, you know what? I'm sick and tired of this education with all these dead, old, black, gay, non-binary. Like, we would call that racist. And yet when we talk like this about white people, oh, it's fine. Because white supremacy, they had power. Yeah, we got it. Thanks. Sammamish High School teacher, Christy Bennett. So if any one of you people listening have a kid in that class, you might want to have a conversation with the principal. 1-800-465-8770 for your text messages. Don't forget our local tax expert and advocate, Greg Nunn, wants you to know that the IRS is going after those old cases very aggressively. And of course, they're going to go after new cases as well. So if you owe money to the IRS, or if you've recently received a form CP-504 from the IRS, do not ignore it. Be proactive. Call Greg Nunn right now at Nunn Better Tax Resolution, N-U-N-N, Nunn Better Tax Resolution.
If Israel did win, would the American media even know what they're looking at? We'll look at the evidence from the Magic 8 Ball of Evidence Brian Suit Show on Monday morning.
Young, Tacoma, Bremerton, Bothell.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Ranch Show.
Redmond, Sumner, Kent.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at that. 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local, brought to you by Alpine Specialty Services, online at alpineclean.com. This is the part of the show where we completely ignore the stories coming out of Seattle, and instead, we focus on all the communities that you live in and care about most. We start in the city of Burien. They just decided to raise their minimum wage. They decided to do it in a slightly more responsible way than what we've seen in the past, which means people are still really upset from the activist class. They're very mad. They do not like responsible or even slightly responsible policy decisions at the city level. So on Monday, they approved their minimum wage hike. And now they're almost certainly going to have to see it challenged via an initiative process from the same people who have been pushing this in Tukwila and SeaTac. Despite the fact that it seemed to be pretty popular amongst the other stakeholders in the city, but the Raise the Wage people are never happy. So under this minimum wage ordinance that they passed, starting in January, large businesses and franchises are required to pay $3 more than whatever the state's minimum wage happens to be in that year. In this case, $16.28 is the state minimum wage. So starting January 1st, again, assuming nothing changes at all, it'll be $19.28 an hour. Now, if you're in a smaller business, they have to pay $2 more than the state's minimum wage. Now, that starts July 2025. Businesses that are uber small, the ones that are 21 employees and under, are exempt from the city ordinance. Now, when I say slightly more responsible, this is the kind of stuff I mean. So I love this idea that you are worth, according to the government, more, not depending on the job you do, but depending on the place you work. Right now, does that make sense to you? So let's say you work at a Starbucks and you have a friend who does the exact same job, also a barista, at a mom and pop coffee shop, one of the small barista stands. So those are uber small businesses. You do the same job. One is worth $19.28, according to the city government. The other one is worth $16.28. Why? Why aren't they both worth exactly the same, give or take a few cents? They've decided that because you work at a smaller business that, well, you know, we'd love to do it, but they can't afford it. Good point. It's a great point. This is all based on assumptions, right? All of this is based on assumptions, and it's getting involved in the market. You're getting involved in changing market forces. Because I would argue the reason why, in reality, that kiosk hut coffee maker person is actually making way more than $16.28, generally speaking, is because they can make more if they go across the street and work at the Starbucks. The market forces an employer to pay a little bit more. Now, all employers, every single one, has a ceiling, right? I mean, at some point, the market is what the market is, and you can afford what you can afford. It's all about the budget of the individual business. But all of this is based on just a blanket assumption that if you're a large business or a quote-unquote medium-sized business or small business, you either can or cannot afford something. When we all know that that's just nonsense, and I would rather have it up to the businesses to decide on their own, in keeping with not only their own budgets and their budgetary needs, but understanding that they can undercut competition by paying a little bit more. I would rather have them decide. Now, is this better than what you saw in Tukwila and Renton and SeaTac, which is just going even higher than that? Yeah, of course. All the data, and I mean all the data, has been pretty consistent. And it says when you raise wages based not on merit, not on worth, you end up seeing fewer jobs, you end up seeing fewer hours, you end up seeing jobs that get consolidated. And of course, the one business that's out there that says, oh, I would do this in a heartbeat. Cool, do it yourself then. What do you need everybody else to do it? What's that ice cream, Molly Moon's? So she always comes out and she's got locations, because normally it would sound like I'm cheating and talking about a Seattle issue. She's got a location in Bellevue, so take that. Yeah, I know the rules. I know how to work around them. So every time this issue came up, she would be quoted in newspapers and on television. I'm a small business owner and I'm going to do it because I want to do what's best for the people. And if I can do it, you can do it. No, that's not how things work. And actually, you know that. Because I imagine there's going to be another business that works in the food industry that pays more than what you pay. So why don't you do that? Well, I can't afford. Yeah, exactly. You can afford what you can afford with your business model. And didn't you just close one of your shops? Molly or Mindy? I think her name isn't even Molly, right? Isn't it something else?
I don't know what the person's name is, but the business is definitely Molly.
Their ice cream is not good. Do you like their ice cream? I don't really like ice cream generally.
I think I've only had it a couple times and nothing to rave about.
Salt and straw, that's good. Oh, that's good. So I said people are upset. It's because they want to do the whole Tukwila thing, which is just get it to a higher rate than in Seattle and then keep up with inflation. They're going to try to get this to a vote. And as I always say, no matter how awful these ideas are, they always pass because people do not think long term. It's like the Uber drivers who say, we demand $1,000 an hour and we can't wait to get it. Yay, we passed it. What? I'm out of a job. No one ever seems to realize that because they're just thinking in the moment and they're voting emotionally. And then you've got businesses that are too scared to say anything because then they'll be attacked by the activists. Go ahead and do what you want, but you're going to suffer the consequences. You're going to have to live with the consequences. Just be sure you're ready to do that. And don't go crying when eventually all of this catches up to you. And folks in Tukwila and Renton and SeaTac, they're experiencing that right now on the DL, not really talking about it all that much, but I know some people who both work there in two of those cities and one who owns a business in the other. They're being a little bit more upfront about what's going on to me. And at some point, it's going to start to spread and it's going to become news stories. People are going to point out, oh, maybe we shouldn't have done this. Hopefully that gets pointed out before Burien makes the wrong decision to continue to go down this path. Now, over in Skyway, Really, Cairo 7? I'm going to read this word for word, both the title and their lead. Title, Half-Baked Skyway Smash and Grab Yields Wrong Kind of Pot. You get it? Baked, half-baked, get it?
Yeah, I got it.
This is the first sentence. Just after 4:20 a.m., Thursday morning, a vehicle crashed into a Skyway building in an apparent attempt to get at the cannabis inside. Oh, you think? You think that's what it was? 4:20, really? No. I'm willing to bet it was actually like 5:15. Or no. What it said? After? Yeah, just after. Well, you know, it's still morning. It's still dark out. They just want to say 4:20. They say two cannabis shops are in this building that this car crashed into. They did not, however, according to Cairo 7, they said instead of breaking into one of the dispensaries, the would-be thieves busted into the back kitchen area of a third business in that building that is not the pot shop. Deputies arrived to find a gaping hole in the building, but every pot and pan was accounted for. Oh, see, that's what they got. See what they did? Because it was a kitchen pot, but also pot because of weed. Get it? You get it? You get it?
I got it.
Well, you're not laughing hysterically. Isn't that hysterical?
I mean, if it was to someone who was smoking pot, maybe it'd be funny.
Yeah, if they were literally high in the moment. The owner told Cairo 7 that he believes the bad guys were after cannabis and just took off when they realized their mistake. That's the whole story. Okay. How do they know? Are we certain they didn't take anything else? Just because they didn't steal the pots and the pans? Are we sure they didn't steal anything else?
I mean, if they were actually fully going in to get weed, I doubt they would go in and take something else.
Something doesn't feel right about this story. Like we're missing some context, probably because they would just want to make a bunch of weed puns. But we've seen these kinds of break-ins of pot shops before where you don't go through the back way. You go right through the storefront. That's always been the case. Now, maybe this building is set up slightly different where that makes it a little bit more difficult. Maybe they had some security infrastructure in place. Maybe. But something about this seems off. I'm almost... should I make the bet? Yeah, because I'm going to forget anyway. I bet Brady's job that we're going to find out that this was either a story of a drunk person who crashed a car and then fled, or it was someone who has a vendetta against that third business. And they had nothing to do with the cannabis stuff, the pot stuff.
You're willing to stake my job on this?
I'm willing to stake your job and livelihood on it.
Oh, that's my livelihood as
that's
well.
That's how confident.
Won't be able to work anywhere else?
Nope. That's how confident I am with this particular story. There's got to be something else. Why not just drive through the front? Then finally, Maple Valley. Businesses along Maple Valley and all the way into Covington. They now find themselves in a position where they've got to put a lot of money into some fixes and into their security systems because there were back-to-back break-ins across the community. And we really should say back-to-back-to-back. We had three attempted burglaries happened within about an hour of one another. And there were some burglaries that were not just attempted, but they were successful. At Gooby's Doobies, that's got to be a pot shop or a smoke shop, right?
That's a pot shop.
Okay, yeah. At Gooby's Doobies in Maple Valley, according to the owner speaking with Fox 13, they had their vape products targeted, and the general manager, Tia Fortner, she here explains all that went down.
They drove through the gate with the stolen car. They were all wearing puffy jackets with hoods, and some of them had masks on.
Yeah. She says that the same thieves came back a different day, but this time, because of security measures, they ended up getting scared off.
They came back 3 days later, but we knew as soon as they were on the premises due to our enhanced security measures.
Now, looking at the video, it's kind of hard to tell actually how many, but there's 4 to 5 thieves trying to get into the shop. And this originally happened on March 9th. The group gets in, they stole what they could. They do point out that there were 2 getaway cars that were in the parking lot waiting for them. Because there were so many of them, you can't all fit into one. And when it's so easy to steal some of these cars, you might as well get, you know, instead of getting the Uber X, you get the Uber luxury one. And that's what they decided to do. They said the security video showed the group approaching the business on foot, smashing through a side window, heading for the product wall. One of the members of the crew, per Fox 13, was caught on camera doing a face plant as they tried to get over the counter. And I'm looking at one of the still images of it right now, and it looks both painful and hysterical. Tia says the criminals left some evidence behind.
They did get good fingerprints. I'm hopeful that there will be prosecution on this also.
I would not be so hopeful on that. I definitely would not be hopeful. I know the whole, well, we got fingerprint. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would be surprised if the fingerprints even have, at this point, have even been tested yet or viewed yet, inspected, whatever the verb is for looking at thumbprints. What if it was like we got a face print when he face planted? Because he's such an oil, because they're probably young. He has oily skin, and it just, we now have a like a mosaic almost on the actual screen.
Went in for the weed, left with a concussion.
Yeah, there you go. You know, if you're a pot shop at this point who hasn't been broken into, I have to imagine every time you go to bed, you're just wondering if overnight will be the inevitable time you get that phone call at like 4:30 or 4:20 a.m. and they tell you that your place has been broken into. Like, it just feels, it has to feel inevitable for these people. In fact, on Monday, we're going to talk to a barbershop owner who had his barbershop broken into, not for the first time, but for the second. And it feels like that's become the reality. That's become the norm, that you get hit 2 times, not just 1. When we come back, you choose the news. Story number 1. Daycare staff immediately have to call 911 after a stunning discovery in a 2-year-old's lunchbox. Or story number 2, we'll take you through what happened with, well, Meghan Markle today. Big news. Lots of people seem to be interested in the royal family. She has some sad news. We'll get into that. But it's up to you. 1-800-465-8770 for your text. Which story should we discuss?
You picked the topic on the Jason Rance Show.
Indeed you did. Pick a topic, and you're curious what was found inside of a 2-year-old's lunchbox. I can give you a hint. It did lead to the mother being charged. Okay? So, now, before I clicked on the story, there were only 2 things that came to mind. Well, I'm assuming it was a serious story and not a goofy one. Otherwise, it would be 3. It would be like a snake or something. But it was either a gun or it was drugs. Maybe it would be both. I don't know how it would get into a child's lunchbox, but that's what I assumed. And it was a handgun. Shanae Davis now finds herself facing several charges in Florida, including allowing a minor to obtain a firearm and child neglect. A teacher at Jackson's Daycare Center in Riviera Beach opened the lunchbox and found a 9mm Glock 43, ooh, a 43, handgun inside. That's a bulk. Well, okay, so I have so many questions already. Because that, number one, is a bulky handgun, and it's heavy. The kid was able, like, how, it's a 2-year-old. Isn't that heavy for a 2-year-old? I know you got the
He got the handle and everything. Maybe he just thought that there was a little extra in his lunch.
Well, I guess. I mean, was it loaded? It doesn't say. Let's see. According to police documents, the discovery caused concern by the teachers. Why the teachers go into his lunchbox? Parents who later learned about the incident obviously got all freaked out, which makes total sense. Al, for example, as a parent, he spoke with CBS 12.
That's just terrifying for the other parents and for anybody at school, a daycare.
That really added to the conversation, CBS 12. Thanks. According to the police department, Davis confirmed to investigators that the gun was hers and that she normally keeps the gun in her vehicle's glove box. However, lately she has been taking the gun inside her apartment after the complex has seen several break-ins, according to Fox News. Court documents show on the night of March 14th, the 39-year-old mother placed the gun inside her son's lunchbox to bring it inside as she told authorities that she does not carry a purse. Okay, I can understand why someone might misplace something like, I don't know, a DVD cover or even your keys. Okay, I got that. It feels like when talking about a firearm, even an irresponsible firearm owner would know to immediately upon entering said household with the lunchbox with the Glock, would then, you know, open it up and then put the gun away in the safe. But here's a question. Did you not make lunch for the kid and open the lunchbox and put food in there the next day?
It's either that or she lifted the lunchbox, felt the weight, was like, I must have done it last night.
Yeah, like, oh, maybe I did. Because it says, like, she put it inside of her son's lunchbox to go into the home, which means she went into the home and some amount of time went by and then they had to go to school the next day, presumably, or maybe 2 days or whatever it is. The kids got the lunchbox. What? Did you or did you not make lunch? Now, I'm assuming if you did, you put it into the lunchbox and you would have opened it and seen the Glock. You're not going to miss that. Right? Something doesn't make sense.
Something is not adding up in this story.
She said, and here's the thing. The mother then said she forgot to take it out the following morning. Okay. Did you forget to make lunch as well? And hey, kid, I know you're two, but did you not say, Mommy, why is my lunchbox so heavy? What'd you put in here? A Glock? Did you get the Glock lost again? Maybe if he was like 12 or 13. No, 13 years old, he might sound like that. Police were subsequently called to the daycare facility and responded promptly. Davis was later arrested, but according to the Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office records, she was released on Friday, March 15th, after posting bail. See, they actually have bail in Florida. Here's another parent who's now having an irrational thought about whether or not she should even send her kid to this place again.
Scary. It's scary. I mean, you know, and... You know, I'm sending my kid to school thinking that he's going to be safe. I mean, nowadays, are they? I don't know.
Okay, well, I mean, it's not the school's fault. And they were, I mean, they were safe. They were safe. Obviously, incredibly irresponsible. She's a bad gun owner. But everyone was fine in the end. According to Telemundo Miami, the owner of the daycare chose not to file charges against the mother. The state prosecutor's office, however, we're going to. Right move. I don't even know what the charges would be against the mother. I would charge the kid. The kid's the one. Why'd you give me that face? The kid's
You're
the one who
charge
brought,
a 2 year old.
Well, who brought the gun into the school?
Who enabled the son?
I didn't ask that. You can also go after her for enabling. They did. That's what they charged her with.
What if it was show and tell day?
Well, that's my point. Who made the decision? It was the kid. But did the mother ever go in? Did she have the lunchbox in hand walking into
the school? There's no evidence
the
kid opened the lunchbox prior to going to school.
That's not what the crime is. He brought a gun to school. And if you bring a gun to school, I'm with the... We have zero tolerance.
Are you going to charge him as an adult too?
Yeah. Well, no, he didn't use the gun. I'll charge him as a juvenile.
Things like that are extremely preventable. You need a gun purse. You need a plan with your gun. You have it in your gun purse. You walk in your home. It goes in a safe or a specific place,
yep,
which is gun safe, just like you would make your child safe or make your pet safe.
I don't know what the pet had to do with any of this. Even I have a gun purse. That's how I know. 1-800-465-8770 for your text messages. 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to what definitely feels like the Friday edition of the Jason Rand Show.
If Israel did win, would the American media even know what they're looking at? We'll look at the evidence from the Magic 8 Ball of Evidence, Brian Suit Show, on Monday morning.